Welcome to Score Business Points, the program that provides information to help small businesses get started, prosper, and grow. A mentor with the Ocean County Chapter of Score, here's your host, Michael Pappas.
Welcome to another edition of Score Business Points. This is your host, Michael Pappas. Last week, you heard part one of my discussion with Neil J. Abitabolo on how to sell your business. In that part, Neil went over the four key factors for selling your business and four of the five items on the seller's business profile worksheet. They were describing the business, explaining sales revenue, assets of the business, including key employees, and financials and cash flow. In part two, Neil will finish up the seller's business profile worksheet, talk about the next step in the selling process, and finally, talk about where a business owner may find prospective buyers for the business. Before we continue with part two of How to Sell Your Business, let me again remind you about Neil J. Abitabolo. Neil is a former businessman and a SCORE mentor. He has experience in C-level operating and financial corporate positions and in consulting activities for small through medium-sized entities in a variety of industries, in both established and startup situations. Neil has also participated as an entrepreneur with an equity stake in a manufacturing business. He has served as an officer, board director, and corporate turnaround expert. Neil has over four decades of experience in driving business transformation, restructuring financial operations, managing companies through bankruptcy reorganizations, and negotiating refinancing and equity placements. He is adept at developing customized models to drive growth and reduce costs for industrial manufacturing, logistics, and business services companies. Neil's expertise includes strategic planning, risk management and mitigation, private equity, mergers and acquisitions, divestitures, startups, public markets, and operations improvement. Now, here is part two on how to sell your business with my guest, Neil J. Abitabolo. And the last item it was on your worksheet was the change in conditions for the new owner. So what exactly does that consist of?
So let's take a ridiculous example, but I think it makes the point. So let's say you're running a business that generates $200,000 in revenue every year, and you decide as the business owner that you should be paid $150,000 a year in salary. Now, that may cause you to lose money, your business may lose money, and $150,000, you're the owner, so I suppose if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. But $150,000 in salary for a business that has gross revenue of $200,000 is inappropriate. It doesn't really line up. Right? So that's the kind of thing. And again, it's an extreme example, but that's something where the buyer would look at that and say, you know, I can get somebody to manage this business if I buy it. And the market, you know, salary for this person, for that kind of person, would be $50,000 a year, let's say. So as soon as I buy this business, I increase the profitability by $100,000 in salary alone. Mm-hmm. And an astute buyer will keep that to themselves. They won't necessarily talk about that, but a seller should understand that. And that provides, in that example, more value to the buyer. That the seller needs to recognize, because the seller also should be making those kind of mental adjustments. So when you get to the point of trying to value the business, you know, both sides understand that there's an opportunity here that should raise the price of the business, perhaps, and raise the value of the business to a potential seller. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one example, but there may be a number of those. There also may be some situations where a seller will own a building through a legal entity that includes his family members, let's say, spouse and siblings or children. And, you know, it's the ABC Business Property Corp. And then the actual business pays that company rent. And again, maybe the appropriate rent is $1,000 a month, but it might make sense for both sides to have rent being $2,000 a month. So the buyer needs to understand that legal situation. Will the buyer be able to continue to rent from the owner who owns that building in a separate, as a separate entity? You know, what is that situation going to be? The buyer would need some assurances in writing, in a, you know, in the contract, that the availability of that building is going to be there for the buyer for some reasonable span of time. Maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years. But you don't want to get into a situation where a buyer is going to buy the, you know, buy the business, and then the next day find that they don't have a location because they refuse to rent it to the new buyer. So these are the kinds of things that would fit into that last category. There are others, but I think that's a good example.
Okay. But I noticed in your presentation as I went through it, that you, after we went through the buyer's profile, that you actually go back to the four keys that you outlined at the beginning of, do you have a business, cash, why and what, and buyer's perspective. Why in your presentation are you actually going back to the beginning?
Yeah. For me, this is kind of, now you've primarily spent time and effort making sure that your business profile is in good shape, that you've covered the areas in the profile. So now, with that information at hand, and as you process that information into this business profile summary, you can go back and review those four factors to make sure that you've covered those in a way. And I think, you know, that business profile identifies enough information where you should be able to say, you can use it as a checkoff list, you know. Mm-hmm. Do I have a business? What's the cash situation? Why are you doing it? You know, what are you expecting from that? And what is the buyer's perspective? So all the elements of the business profile just reinforce the fact that you can speak to these four factors. So that's why I kind of bring it back up again as a checklist to make sure that everything's covered.
All right. Well, now that you've covered the business profile worksheet and the four factors, so what's next in the process?
Well, next in the process is really to come up with evaluation of the business. And briefly mentioned before that, you know, it starts, it's almost like a fork in the road. You know, the right fork is, am I selling assets? And is that the most efficient way for me or for the seller to sell the business? So if I have, you know, I have a business worth $500,000 in today's market, a building worth $500,000 in today's real estate market, I've got machinery, that's another $50,000. I've got intellectual property that I put a value on of $100,000. I look at all those and I say, you know, maybe the best thing for me to do is bundle this up, put a price tag on it, $750,000, and find somebody who's willing to buy those assets and then employ those assets to continue this business. And really, that's all you're selling. You're selling those assets. You know, those assets have value on their own, but they have more value as part of the business. It's, you can relate it a little bit to, you know, you're going to sell your house tomorrow. So it's not necessarily what you do as the owner of that house. It's more, you know, what is the market say your house is worth? It's less of a usage thing and more of a value thing. Mm-hmm. And if you're selling assets, that's one way to do it. It's a separate kind of a legal transaction, which we won't get into now, but it is a way to do a business transaction. The other fork in the road is to sell your business on the basis of cash flow. If we go back again to Shark Tank, we've traced our way back to Shark Tank a few times. But if we go back to that and we talk about, sometimes people value their business as, you know, I do $1 million in sales, so I want to sell my business for $1 million. Well, that's not exactly how people think about the value of a business, although you certainly could identify the price as an amount related to revenue. But when people do valuations, they do it on the basis of cash flow. So just for the moment, if your business generates $200,000 a year in cash flow, and for your industry, Normally, people take cash flow and multiply it by five. So then you could say, well, $200,000 times five is $1 million. Coincidentally, that's the revenue. So I'm selling it for 1 year's revenue. But the basis for that calculation is usually cash flow. Now, cash flow is not net income after tax. It's not pre-tax. There's some adjustments that you do. And the industry has come up with something that, you know, it's been around for years called EBITDA. And it simply is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And we won't even go into how that's calculated. But it's kind of a standard way for buyers or investors, particularly, to value different businesses. And it also takes out of the equation, you know, whatever the implications are for owning assets or renting assets or paying taxes or not paying taxes, whether you finance your business with loans or with equity. It sort of eliminates those differences and gives you what we might say is a pure value of cash flow from your business. It's something that can be calculated. It comes off those three financial statements that we talked about before. And then every industry, or most industries, have published multiples. It's referred to as multiples, which is once I establish what my average cash flow is or what my average EBITDA is, then I can apply the industry multiple to that to get an idea of what that business is worth. So in the jewelry business, which has, you know, generally good margins, high margins, as I think everybody understands, the multiple for jewelry business might be higher than, you know, the business making widgets. Widgets are a commodity. You can buy them any place. They have a relatively low margin. Most people make their money when they make widgets by volume. So that multiple is going to be lower than a jewelry store. So the kind of business that you're in will put you in a category of a multiple. And then, you know, how good you're operating your business might increase that. If you've got talent in the business that's going to stay, it might increase that. If, you know, you're the owner and you're the one who has the expertise and you're the one that really understands the business, but you're retiring to Florida, then the multiple might get adjusted a little bit lower. So it's just to sort of, you know, give people the concept that cash is really how businesses are valued. Free cash flow is important. EBITDA is important. Another person might recommend a different metric for cash flow to determine it. That's fine. They all have their own level of validity, but that's really the key. So on Shark Tank, when somebody comes in and says, you know, I want $1 million for 5% of my business because 3 years from now, you know, I'm going to do $20 million in sales. And everybody sort of laughs and chuckles. And you know, they close their notebooks. And generally, it's going to be a no. you know, they haven't related the value to the key factor, which is, you know, what's the cash flow? Uh-huh. So, you know, the valuation is important. And that's an overview. There's certainly a lot more detail involved in finalizing that. You know, but that's gives you a sense of, you know, what I think is involved and how you develop the value.
Okay. Now, well, one question I have not asked you yet is, how does a small business owner go about finding prospective buyers?
Yeah. Well, that's the toughest question, right, Mike? So what I find is that people need to look in their space first, understand, you know, who their competition is and whether or not a competitor could be a viable buyer of their business. That is very often where people find potential buyers. So if you're competing with one or two other people and you're in a similar market, similar space, maybe similar geography, and maybe your activity is complementary, it's not exactly one for one, then a competitor would be a good source. Now, you've got to be careful there, because once you communicate to a competitor that you may be interested in selling your business, you know, that could hurt you in the marketplace. So you have to be pretty sensitive to that. Probably a good time to talk about non-disclose agreements. And that is, you know, once you've done this business profile and maybe you have a document, or maybe you're ready for a conversation with somebody who might potentially buy your business, that's the time to consider a non-disclose agreement or an NDA, where both parties would agree, you and the person you're going to have the conversation with or you're going to give this package to, sign an agreement that binds you to keeping this information to yourself. I'm sure, you know, everybody knows what a non-disclose is, I believe. And it's not a fail-safe. It's not ironclad. People break non-disclose agreements, but at least it gives you, within that document, the legal right to recourse. Depends on, you know, maybe very, very strong, or maybe something where you still have to get attorneys involved and fight it out in court. But at least you've got a document. And, you know, if people, generally people will be honest about that. They tend to keep things to themselves. It's not easy to do because once you tell me something, you know, it's part of whatever knowledge I might have about the subject that you've told me about. And I may have difficulty distinguishing, well, who told me that? But that's human nature. But other than those kinds of things, non-disclose can be pretty good. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking to a competitor, you certainly would want to have a non-disclose. The other place to look would be in your vertical chain. So, you know, let's say you're a retail seller of designer clothing. So one place to look might be, do you sell your clothing through an established retail outlet? You know, might they want to back integrate and take over your business, particularly if, you know, you're not doing a lot of heavy manufacturing of that retail item. You know, it's sort of a wholesale to retail to the store. Or conversely, you maybe find that your suppliers might have interest, probably more your suppliers. So, you know, they're providing you with all the material to make a widget, and you're doing the actual manufacturing of the widget and selling it. And the supplier may say, hey, you know, I know the business. I know the items. I know the material that's needed. I can run, you know, we can run the widget manufacturing. It's not that difficult. So maybe we'll be interested in potentially buying that business and have control of the product for a longer span in the channel and increase our overall margin. So suppliers, competitors, customers, these are all choices. There are postings available online for all kinds of businesses. And they're basically little teasers that just identify, you know, hey, there's a business in New Jersey. It does, it's in a retail industry. It does $1 million a year in sales. It's got a 20% pre-tax profitability margin, and it's operated by a sole proprietor, generates so much in cash flow, and the seller is looking for $750,000 or best offer perhaps. And you can go and post that. You can do that individually, or you can do it through an aggregator. Or you can even, you know, do it through a commercial broker, people mm-hmm. that sell businesses that work on a commission. So it may not really cost you very much other than the commission to do that. And other than that, you know, there are those things to look at. Other than that, it's just, you know, it's networking. It's the same way that you've developed the market to sell your products or sell your services or, you know, do your contract work. It's the same kind of thing. Okay. You know, you go to Chamber of Commerce meetings, you go to local activities within your town, you go to county meetings, or you know, some other places to try to find somebody who might be interested. There are a couple of organizations in New Jersey, and again, with COVID, life has changed, but they run you know, one-day events for people who are interested in selling or in getting an investor to go into their business. And you can, you know, potential sellers can look into that as well. That's where, you know, you get on the list and you might have a small table in a conference hall, and you know, you put up a little bit of information about your business, maybe have a handout, and the audience is made up of people who invest in businesses or potentially are looking to buy businesses, and you give them a pitch. You got to do your 90-second elevator pitch as they're walking by your table. And sometimes they do it the other way, where you actually will get up, you know, behind a microphone and a podium and give your 3 minutes to the whole group. Mm-hmm. That's tough. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pressure there. But, you know, these are some other outlets, and they have those on a state basis or on a county basis. And again, that activity is a little depressed now, because, you know, we're not all getting together as much as we used to.
Right.
So okay. That's some thoughts about, you know, how you'd come about that.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you, Neil, for all the information that you've passed on about selling a small business. I think the listeners have been privy to some very sage advice from you. There are a few more things that as a small business owner you should be aware of when it comes to selling your business. The best time to begin planning the sale of your business is before it's time to sell. Many small business owners fail to prepare ahead of time. This can make the selling process overwhelming and result in more stress and less profitability. Even if you think you'll never sell, it's in your best interest to understand the process. There's a lot that goes into selling a business, and it can take months to years for a business to sell. Did you know that on average, it takes 2 to 4 years to sell a small business? That's why you want to plan ahead to address any possible issues and not miss your window of opportunity. Many owners rely on casual advice from friends, advisors inexperienced in valuing a business, or other similarly unreliable sources. This can result in valuations that are either too high or too low. If the owner's expectation of value is too high, it will prolong the selling process until a price concession is made. If the price is too low, money is left on the table. Unless the business owner goes through the valuation process, he or she will just not know if the business is priced at market value. Remember Shark Tank. Obviously, putting a profitable business on the market is the best way to sell it and maximize your return as well. If you're not in a position to weather the storm and must sell your business quickly, don't rush the process. Gain help from a professional, such as a business broker or intermediary. It's important to note potential buyers will be suspect of your reasons for selling, especially in a sector that is poorly performing. Your broker will be able to help devise a strategy that will help quell the fears of prospective buyers and put you in a position to receive a reasonable offer in a reasonable amount of time versus doing it alone. Remember, the real value of your business isn't based on your estimation of its worth. Instead, it's based on quantifiable data. Be sure to have a third-party valuation of your business. Compare similar sales in your area. Once you understand what your business is worth, address any issues that stand in the way of a higher selling price. Selling a small business isn't just about cashing out and making a profit. It's about doing what's best for the business and the people involved. You want your business to fall into the right hands, and you want to take care of those who helped you grow your business. That's why choosing the right buyer matters. You want a buyer who has the knowledge and the finances to make the business successful in the future. Too many businesses go down after a new owner takes over. You want to weigh your options and go for the best fit for the long-term success of the company. And one last thing. As a business owner, you want to present your business in the best possible light. But there's a difference between focusing on the positive and misrepresenting your business to influence a buyer. Exaggerating the virtues of your business could come back to haunt you later. Be positive, but present the truth to the buyer, whatever that may be. Don't try to cover up problems or present false projections for the future. You want to sell your business, but not at the expense of your credibility in your industry. Misrepresenting your business could ruin a potential sale and lead to possible legal action against you in the future. If you are using a broker, make sure you have a trustworthy, experienced broker to guide you throughout the selling process. If you would like more information about this show, or for that matter, any Score Business Points show, you may email me at sbp@wbnj.org. That's sbp@wbnj.org. If there's a small business topic you'd like to hear discussed on Score Business Points, or you have a comment about this show, you may contact me at the same email address, sbp@wbnj.org. That's all the time we have for today. I would again like to thank my guest, Neil J. Abitabolo, for taking the time to be with us today. Tune in next week for more Score Business Points. This is your host, Michael Pappas, saying so long until then.
For those who may not be familiar with SCORE, SCORE is a nonprofit association dedicated to helping small businesses get off the ground, grow, and achieve their goals through education and mentorship. They have been doing this for over 50 years. Because their work is supported by the U.S. Small Business Administration, the SBA, and thanks to a network of 11,000-plus volunteers, they are able to deliver their services at no charge or very low cost. For more information about how you and your business can benefit from a mentorship from SCORE, you can visit OceanCounty.score.org. OceanCounty.score.org. And if you missed any part of today's broadcast, you can catch an instant replay at WBNJ.org. Score Business Points is a production of the Ocean County Chapter of SCORE at 91.9 WBNJ.